So we're going to leave you with a heartbreaker this morning before we go. For months, supposedly historic headlines, secret talks unfolding between the Taliban and Afghan leaders. Could it have been a gesture on the order of the secret talks between Henry Kissinger and Lee Duc-Tho that ended the long Vietnam War? Well, it turns out the senior Taliban leader, or so-called senior Taliban leader, a man by the name of Mullah Akhtar Mohammed Mansour, was actually something of an imposter, had no credibility with the Taliban, and may have been actually a plant to find out more about the allies and the Afghan government's role in the so-called surge in Afghanistan, rather than being any sort of interlocutor. Joining us now is Christine Fair, professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. Christine, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I have to say, I mean, my heart is in this. Imposter? I mean, are you serious? What could that possibly mean?
You know, I was joking with your producer. It really does bring to fore an Eminem song. Will the real Mullah Akhtar please stand up?
Oh, my God, yeah. Absolutely.
I know. It really is just astonishing. You know, the issue is, of course, we are supposed to have databases of the photos of the so-called high-value targets. We have human terrain teams whose job it is to be assembling binders of biographies of these folks. And, you know, we have to have photos of high-value targets because of some of the things for which they're singled out. So it's absolutely astonishing that it went this far before they were able to discover that, in fact, this guy was just some shopkeeper from a small town in Pakistan.
Well, learning that Eminem is on your playlist makes me feel a little bit better about this story, Christine Fair. But let's talk about some scenarios that might mitigate what we're looking at here. Is it possible that this fellow was kind of an Ahmed Chalabi, a person dialed in but with really no ultimate credibility, but he certainly has relationships with all of the parties here?
We just don't know, and I don't know if we will know because this was such an embarrassment. I mean, one possibility is that he was basically planted by the ISI. I mean, the ISI has a great interest in understanding what's going on with the negotiations because there have been so many efforts to cut and that's the Pakistani Intelligence Organization,
sure,
to cut Pakistan out of the picture. So, I mean, one of the more sensible explanations, apart from complete stupidity in the palace and at NATO ISAF, is that, in fact, he was perhaps an ISI plant, in which case they must be laughing their arses off in Rawalpindi.
Well, you know, the ISI scenario, that's a really disturbing one because there is a long history of the ISI trying to wag the dog here going back to the Reagan era. But let's try to come up with another scenario that might mitigate this. I mean, is this a possibility that NATO, ISAF, is trying to allow the Karzai government to, be autonomous in its outreach to the Taliban government, and that this is a Taliban officials, and this is a Karzai mistake, and that NATO really isn't involved?
See, there's actually two different programs, and it's easy to get them confused. One is the reconciliation program, and that is being run by the palace. This is an effort to make a political accommodation with the Taliban to bring an end to the insurgency, and that could mean allowing them some form of political role at the federal as well as subnational levels. Then there's the reintegration program, which is sponsored, well, really, it was the brainchild of Holbrooke, among others. And this is what's been derided as the $10 a day Taliban, where we're basically trying to give these guys some training, some education, some potentially job prospects to get them to stop fighting. I mean, that's just a complete farce. So it is entirely possible that this is just a palace blunder. But the issue, of course, is that this guy was brought onto NATO aircraft. He was given diplomatic status,
right,
and crap loads of money. So at some point, NATO has to take some responsibility. Even if this was a complete palace blunder, NATO has some culpability. If I were a betting person, and it's, of course, too early, my guess would be this is either a complete blunder, but more likely, I think this is probably a machination from Pakistani intelligence. I mean, apart from accepting complete human capacity to be completely an ignoramus, the ISI story, I don't know, it makes the most
sense.
Taking off the table that everyone just screwed up.
Well,
you can't take that off. I mean, there's been a lot of screw-ups in Afghanistan.
Sure. And you know, the dollar amount of money has yet to be determined at this point, at least based on the reporting that we have. It's huge. But let's,
it must have been millions.
Right. And let's, you know, recall that there's kind of a growth industry for multiple agents in Afghanistan. I mean, and and with some bloody consequences. I mean, the CIA casualties that were taken in that attack, I believe late last year, was the result of somebody, particularly the CIA, relying on an agent that was working for three sides, not even two sides.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if this guy had been up to no good, I mean, he could have. I mean, it's entirely possible that he could have done something really quite grotesque. But the fact that this went on for three rounds, I mean, usually, you know, you'd expect someone that once they get access to the palace, that that's when things would go down. So it doesn't seem as if terror was on his agenda. It either seems as if he was just trying to put himself in a position to make crap loads of money, and or, you know, he was planted by the ISI, or just NATO and the palace are completely inept. But the point that you make about imposters, we've lost a lot of lives. We've had translators go after Afghan national security forces that we've been training, as well as our troops and the troops of our allies. And this speaks to a much larger issue, and that is we have really lousy intelligence.
Right, and let's focus on it.
Amazing.
We go back to Iraq. You've got, I mean, the Ahmed Chalabi example is suddenly relevant here. We're trusting people to be our eyes and ears on the ground. And as Bob Baer said, you know, famously from the CIA, we don't have people that are trusted and that are close enough on the ground to even evaluate these kind of big figures that we end up dealing with.
No, I mean, that's really true. And the one thing that I am perpetually amazed by is our lack of language capabilities. The New York Police Department has more linguists than the CIA. Now, how to put this delicately, Farsi, Dari, is not a complicated language. It doesn't have some of the more bizarre peculiarities that, say, even French or German has. It's a pretty straight-up language. And I can't believe that we've been into this war now for 9 years, and we are still relying upon translators. And I have fielded a number of phone calls from defense contractors whose job it is to find linguists. A, it's a hard job. They have absolutely no means to evaluate these people. So B, we just have to take them at their word that they are who they say they are and that they want to work with us as opposed to undermine us. But we're 9 years into this, and this is where we are. This is the state of our art.
All right. I'm trying really, really hard to put some positive spin on this, and there is just absolutely none coming from Christine Fair, a professor at Georgetown University. Do you speak Dari?
You know me. I know enough Dari to get myself in trouble, but Urdu and Punjabi are my languages. But I studied Dari in Iran a number of years ago. It's not a hard language. If you put someone in there intensive training for a year, you can actually get around.
Well, our fact checkers are checking your grades there, Christine Fair, a professor at the center.
I know a little bit of Dari.
Professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University, thanks, as always, setting into context this story that a senior Taliban commander supposedly negotiating some sort of end to the war in Afghanistan with the Afghan government turning out to be an imposter who took millions from the Afghan government, which basically means from the U.S. taxpayer.
If you make your way over to our website, thetakeaway.org, you can actually take a look at some of the sights, hear the sounds, and look at the objects that make our listeners and us feel like we're at home when we're home. Earlier, we talked about the music that makes us think of home.
Let us break bread together on our knees.
Sing it, Paul Robeson. Take part in our series. Use your iPhone app to send us your submissions. What's home? Have a happy Thanksgiving. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can't sing as well as Paul. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
On Mondays, with my face to the rising.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.